Good evening to everyone is here this evening. There are way more people than I thought would be here, but I thank you for joining me this evening. Also, many, many thanks to Oberbürgermeister Dr. Schölle, Professor Dr. Hoffman, and also to Herr Grimmels in his absence. I very much appreciate your thank yous and your warm words of welcome for me here tonight. I also thank you all for the warm reception that I've received in the past few months and for this full support of this upcoming exhibition. I've had the privilege of meeting many, many Kasslers during this visit, and in December, I've met Documenta employees, past and present. I've met supporters, and I've even met strangers in cafes and restaurants. And everyone has approached me with well wishes. And from all these people, I feel a genuine and palpable love for Documenta and a concern for the future of this institution and for the promise that it holds for the sake of culture in the world. So I thank everyone for that. And now my task is to get to know the history of Documenta. And, of course, to get better acquainted with Kassel. I'm enjoying my meetings and visits to the archive and getting acquainted with team members. And I look forward to taking up residency here in Kassel very soon. It is early days yet in my tenure as artistic director, and I very much look forward to my formal presentation of my concept in the coming months. And until then, I thought it would be useful for me to introduce myself and give you a sense of some of my curatorial methodologies. This is a photograph by the Los Angeles-based artist Colleen Smith. It was taken in Chicago, where she worked for some years. In fact, it was taken very near to the place, to the exact place where I was born, and in the neighborhood in which I was raised. I had no choice in the matter, but I feel very lucky that I was born in Chicago. It is in the Midwest, which is in the middle of the United States. People there are known to be polite, kind, and dependable. It is, as British art historian Tony Ute called it, the most American of American cities. It is a developed city that survived an era of deindustrialization and thrived as the world shifted to a globalized services and tech-based economy. It is a place where many people from around the world congregated, to use a word by the historian David Levering Lewis, to describe the sizable immigrant communities who have settled in the city, especially from the Middle, Southern, and Eastern Europe, from Ireland, from Eastern and Southern Asia, from Latin America, and even internally from within the United States. My own family was part of what is called the Great Migration, which was the movement of millions of black people from the Southern United States into the North in the first half of the 20th century. Levering Lewis preferred to speak of congregation, rather than segregation, to think about the agency of these communities in building a world around them. A sustaining cloister of language and traditions that was needed to thrive in a new land. Indeed, I could walk around Chicago's Lincoln Square neighborhood deep into the 2000s and still hear neighbors speaking to each other in German. My family was part of Chicago's large black community, which, when I was very young, was just coming to the very end of an era of incredible creative energy. It was a time when artists believed that they were playing a part in remaking society and in reforming people's perception of themselves. Often, that came in the form of images that allowed black people to feel beautiful and powerful in a world that denied them both beauty and agency. It was a time of advocacy for social justice and was deeply inspired by Pan-Africanism. The Pan-African movement articulated a sense of camaraderie and shared liberation goals across the Black diaspora, especially as former African and even some Caribbean colonies emerged from under European rule as independent nations. And here in this image, you see that inspiration in Stephen Nelson's work that posits Black people as sort of otherworldly vectors of electric energy. Though these works were made in Chicago, we see that the text, which means freedom in Swahili, the lingua franca of Africa. Pan-Africanism sat in solidarity with liberation movements beyond Africa and the Caribbean toward Asia and the Middle East, Latin America, and Eastern Europe, which developed into a coalition better known as the Non-Aligned Movement in the 1950s. It was a broad utopian project that I absorbed subconsciously from a very young age, inspiring within me a global imagination. I always had the sense that I was part of a worldwide family, that my vocational responsibilities could and should be to people very far away geographically, but close in the spirit of a diasporic kinship. These were the days of my nascent global awareness from inside the diaspora, but then out into the entire world. This moment in Chicago was also a high period of collaborative creation among artists of every discipline. At this time, painters danced, dancers wrote, writers played music, musicians painted, and so forth. As you can see in this musical performance by the Art Ensemble of Chicago, a sense of theater seeps into their performances, with each member playing kind of an adopted role. There's the griot, the scientist, and the shaman, for instance. And it was often the case that the Art Ensemble had painted murals in the backgrounds as backdrops to their music set. So this interdisciplinary ethos created a non-hierarchical opening for audiences of all descriptions. And it proposed that art can be experienced as a corporeal and as a social experience, not just a visual one. This historical period was my initial and informal education into culture, and formally crystallized later into the exhibition, The Freedom Principle, Experiments in Art and Music, 1965 to now. And in the spirit of collaboration, which motivated many of the artists in the exhibition, I co-curated this exhibition with Dieter Ruhlstrater, who was part of the Documenta 14 artistic team. Together, we created an exhibition that celebrated art, music, and the material history of the mid-1960s in Chicago and its international resonances that continue to this very day. In particular, we were interested in how that period saw the formation of many art and music collectives who sought alternative vehicles for presenting their work and teaching their craft at a time when many traditional venues were closed to Black artists. Crucially, the performing arts were on equal footing with the visual arts, and we curated both aspects into the exhibition, as is the case for the soundstage you see here that housed instruments from the Art Ensemble of Chicago. It was also used for live performances and even for the recording of a brand new album by the group. I am keenly interested in how certain forms of art and disciplines are upended by this kind of cross-disciplinary thinking. such as in the case of these graphic scores by Wadada Leah Smith. And by graphic scores, I mean these ethereal, somewhat abstract drawings, which are actually meant to be interpreted and played and performed by musicians. So I have a homeland connection to the art of this time and place, and the Freedom Principle for me was a kind of homage to my home city. But the exhibition demonstrated how one's life origins play a significant role in developing conceptual frameworks for one's being in the world, and for me in particular, thinking about the place and possibilities of culture. As an American, I'm also keenly aware of the world's gaze onto my country and its constant curiosity, consumption, and reflections on our cultural products and history. I'm particularly interested when non-American curators turn their critical gaze onto Americans' culture history. As such, I was honored to join the collaborative team for an exhibition that looked obliquely to the American Civil War and its aftermath for clues into the status of contemporary democracy. Grief and Grievance at the New Museum was a project conceived by Okwi Mweze, whose epochal and consequential Documenta 11 placed Kaso within a networked conversation among multiple post-colonial geographies. For the Grief and Grievance exhibition, Mweze asked, how does a nation contend with unprocessed trauma? How do emotions and affective symbols erupt into policies and decisions and social malaise? How do segregationist practices create different cultures? And how can different cultures meet on equal footing? Haunting these questions above about the US are also issues in Mweze's Documenta project foregrounded as well. This project revolved around the state of cultural interactions between the so-called North and South, and the asymmetric integration projects across the North. These questions remain urgent in an age of massive migration. And I remain interested in the ever-shifting status of the migrating subject. How does the immigrant torque oneself to fit into one's adopted home? How does it feel to have a sense of oneself exploded? To be perpetually lost, or to have a sense of being unmoored from the earth? Mweze smartly posed questions of affect and emotion alongside those of geopolitical and cultural import. Co-curating the New Museum exhibition was part of my own grieving process after Mweze passed away in 2019. In fact, I have a hard time saying it without wanting to cry. Okwi is clearly a model for me, not only in terms of creating exhibitions from an informed historical perspective, but also in framing every curatorial project as a process of co-learning with artists. But in fact, Okwi's death was part of a twin tragedy, as his and BC Silva's death occurred within weeks of each other. Silva was the founder and director of the Center for Contemporary Art in Lagos, Nigeria, and ASICO, an innovative itinerant art school conducted across the African continent. Silva was committed to creating structures for bringing cultural workers together, building lines of communication, enabling movement, and forming gathering sites where none existed before. And herein lies a parallel mission with one of the wonderful and ongoing necessities of Documenta, forming bonds that are needed, and maybe even forming bonds that we weren't aware that we needed. As I consider these cultural questions, these cultural inheritances, this interdisciplinary thinking and ethical models, I am also pondering the question, what does Documenta ask for now? As we close out the first quarter of the 21st century, perhaps we can describe our state of global affairs, both in wealthy and under-resourced parts of the world, as being in a steady state of shattered expectations. The examples are numerous. After decades of international cooperation, cross-border organization, and economic integration, we humans now face regional wars and the threat of broader conflicts, rampant displacement and forced migrations, excessive resource extraction, ecological disasters, unfettered technological encroachments into our private lives, ascendant autocracies, economic precarity, retrogression for minority rights, and basically a wholesale and broad disregard for human and environmental rights. Closer to Documenta's specific concerns and those of the international culture sphere in general, there is a widening chasm between national political projects from Boston to Bratislava and the urgencies within communities of cultural producers. But for many artists around the world, these conditions are not at all unusual. Their experience can be instructive. Rather than imagine the Documenta 16 exhibition as a mere cataloging of these very real and current traumas, I would like to examine the ways in which artists of all disciplines have always responded in real time to existential or conditional precarity, being nimble and adaptable to ghastly situations, developing strategies for living and creating within spaces of indeterminacy and within crises on aesthetic, personal, and planetary levels. Documenta was born of utopian thinking. It was developed as a form of cultural diplomacy and reclamation that, unlike the Venice Biennale, placed focus on post-war cultural exchange rather than on national affiliations. It was and remains cosmopolitan, against essentialization, and pro-peace. Though CASO and its art community had no direct hand in catalyzing World War II, Documenta was willing to face head-on the responsibility of updating Germany's position and reputation in a new world order. That world order, which established the U.S. as the first economic and military superpower, set up the terms for the Cold War, and rebuilt Western Europe under the auspices of a common market and common project of peace, is now already receding in our collective vision. Within these current multipolar, transactional, and even violent conditions, the post-World War II era is closed, and another, less coherent one, is emerging. So now, we must divine what is important to hold of Documenta's originary utopianism, and what frameworks must be adjusted in understanding this new world. Documenta's many artistic directors have been prescient in adjusting to and even preceding frameworks around including the whole earth in its enterprise. In the last 70 years, the exhibitions have steadily marked the shifts of understanding of artists international, which was Baudot's model, to global, which was Catherine David's model that initiated the sort of post-colonial term and these sort of south-south connections, toward the planetary, which was Ruwen Grupel's model of decentralized collectivity. In many ways, this development feels like the fulfillment of a geographic expansion project. Indeed, as Walter Grasskamp has argued, and borrowing heavily from the work of Harold Kempel, since the first edition in 1955, Documenta has certainly shifted from a Eurocentric exhibition to one that has a better and much more inclusive understanding of multiple political geographies. But I do not believe that we should only judge Documenta by its expanding global reach. Documenta has been the foremost institution for centering art in the task of making meaning of our world right now. Ever since that explosive Documenta 5, every edition has created a sensitive and nuanced understanding of the historic conditions under which artists create, the ways those conditions impress themselves onto artistic practices. This is not to say that visual art directly responds to social conditions, but as Adam Szymczyk stated, art doesn't always necessarily take the form of an overt political statement. A work is an extension of the conditions of life, not their illustration. For decades, Documenta has partnered with artists as they contend with historic confluences and frictions, with the anxiety of influence and their ideas and emotions. In this now incoherent but palpable new world, I will be looking to artists, not so much for their individual politics, but for what they adapt as modes of thinking now. I am interested in their insights into and the prophetic vision on how we exist today. These visions aren't always comfortable. Consider Anselm Kiefer's early mature works, performances that mocked the popular acquiescence under the dictatorship, and paintings like the one you see here, full of melancholy and apocalyptic visions. Apocalyptic landscapes. And these were like the subconscious dreams of the post-war German state. These works were taboo in the early days of Kiefer's career. Yet, Rudi Fuchs presented Kiefer in Documenta 7, contextualizing the artist in a way that allows his audiences to understand how unrecognized trauma persisted in the German populace and in its landscape. And there is a difference between what I'm calling a prophetic vision and a provocation. Prophetic vision seeks understanding. A provocation seeks reaction. And provocations usually come at the expense of someone's value and respect. And this I cannot abide, personally or professionally. For Documenta 16, I will not tolerate denigrations or presumptions about anyone or any group, especially those based on national origin, cultural heritage, religious creed, sexual orientation, gender expression, financial status, physical abilities, family arrangements, sexual preferences, or the sins of their fathers, their mothers, or their siblings. I will welcome inclusivity and a culture of discourse. I even welcome debate and arguments, but I will not condone physical, verbal, or symbolic violence against others. Listen, there's already enough violence in the world, and we do not need it here. My zero tolerance stance will be an understanding with every artist agreeing to participate in Documenta 17. We will all share the responsibility of creating this exhibition in the spirit of mutual respect and in the embrace of mutual protection. Yet, I want to clearly acknowledge that artists are citizens with rights of expression that operate alongside their artistic output. And my curatorial role is also to make space for that. As you've heard, I also work at the Guggenheim Museum in New York, which is, as a beautiful and photogenic building, is often the site of public protest and artists' expressions of dissent. And given the frequency of these events, we had to make a position in regards to the temporary hacking, if you will, of our iconic museum building. We had to think about the safety of the art and audiences, of course, but we also had to think about the physical and psychological safety of my colleagues, especially those who face the public every day. While discussing this on a case-by-case basis for years, we were able, in the last year, to work with our staff and our board of trustees to create what we call our first principles. These principles allow for a balance between the freedom of expression while removing the threat of verbal and physical violence. It is a set of principles that we apply to our exhibitions and even to protesters who come into the building. And by having these principles in place and understood by the entire institution, we have the flexibility to negotiate situations, not simply react to them. I'm immensely proud of the Guggenheim for co-developing these principles, which also align with my personal ethics. I operate under what the artist Arthur Jaffa calls a principle of discrepancy, which he describes as the ability to distinguish between structures of power and people, between movements and individual actors, between verbiage, which is what is said, and meaning, which is what is meant to be conveyed. This is the discretion that I will bring to Documenta 16. I do this because I believe art is an active form of thinking historically in the present, to borrow a phrase from Khoor al-Qasimi. Not every issue can be aestheticized, and art can't answer to all the world's ills. But it can bring people together in a microcosm of democratic discourse. In that spirit, Documenta affords a space for study, for focus, for exploration, experimentation, and awakenings. Ideally, Documenta 16 will develop within CASEL as a dialogic arena for transcultural thought, as it has for many editions already. Documenta, especially in the last 25 years, has fostered urgent and necessary discourse over several international platforms. But CASEL, in the very center of Germany, with a population of about 40% inhabitants identifying as having non-European heritage, is an incubator for transcultural modes of living and exchanges. It occurred to me recently that Documenta was born the same year as the Bandung Conference that launched the Non-Aligned Movement. These events were wholly separated in geography and in purpose, but both were born of utopian dreaming. But now, these disparate visions have come together. But now these disparate visions of the world have converged in cultural projects such as Documenta that consider the urgencies of art and life. I am fascinated by my selection as artistic director, as I am someone who was educated in the ideologies of the Global South strivings, but located within the Global North hegemony. I have inherited both utopian visions, living in their simultaneity, and invested in examining their residue and discards for pieces of those visions that may be worth saving. Plenty of projects in the world have done amazing work in investigating the relationship of the North to the South, however these geographies may be defined. And I'm less interested in defining that encounter and more in the cultural practices that happen from these encounters, the disordered forms, the disrupted logics, a sense of non-linearity, and flattened hierarchies. I do not fear an order that I cannot understand. In fact, it gives me something to study. According to Kojo Eshun, one of the founders of the Audolith Group, which participated in Documenta 13, one must be wary of what he calls chronopolitical instruments designed to envision, manage, and deliver futures, end quote. How can we, cultural workers, and our audiences imagine a future from the here and now? From the here and now that is not prepackaged, but respectfully considers all the entanglements of the past and our many present conditions. Quote, to know the unpredictable is to shape oneself to the present, says Edouard Glisson. The present time that one is living in a different way, no longer empirical, no longer systematic, but poetic. When we give ourselves over to the poetic together, we create new potential histories in this present, and we deliver our own futures. Hopefully, these futures will be better histories than the ones that we've inherited. Thank you.
Liebe Naomi Beckwith, herzlichen Dank für diese Ausführungen. Sie haben nun die Möglichkeit, Ihre Fragen an die künstlerische Leitung der Documenta 16 zu stellen. Ich möchte Sie bitten, wenn Sie das tun, dazu die beiden Saalmikrofone zu verwenden. Und nennen Sie doch bitte zu Beginn Ihrer Frage Ihren Namen und, wenn Sie journalistisch tätig sind, auch das Medium, für das Sie arbeiten. Herzlichen Dank. Der Publikumsdialog ist eröffnet. Bitte schön.
Good evening. Hallo? Hört man das? Okay.
Ja.
Hi. Maria Inés Plaza Lasso. I'm the editor and publisher of Arts of the Working Class, a multilingual street newspaper in Germany. I have two questions, but one is about the human dignity versus institutional compliance. And the second, the politics of prevention and the shift to an apolitical elite.
Sorry, can you say that one more time?
The politics of prevention and the shift to an apolitical elite.
Okay.
I couldn't agree more with everything that you say today, so I'm very grateful for this first presentation that you're doing here in Germany. You have emphasized respect for affect and emotion for human dignity as a guiding principle of Documenta 16. Yet in Germany, the concept of dignity is often wielded selectively, where certain groups, particularly pro-Palestinians, Muslim and racialized voices, are denied the same protection as others. How do you navigate this contradiction, and what concrete measures are in place to prevent Documenta 16 from becoming complicit to these exclusions? And the second, in the wake of Documenta 15, as you well know, the measures being put in place for Documenta 16, designed to preempt controversy, seem to comply with a soft politics that instrumentalizes anti-Semitism to justify conservative cultural policies while masking structural racism and xenophobia in Germany. Yep. So what is your response to the concern that Documenta 16 will become a gathering of an apolitical elite detached from the urgencies of the present? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Those are some very pointed questions, and one in which I'm not surprised to see, of course. I know the context of Documenta 15. I have seen some of those reactions. I think there are many ways to think about and approach the various reactions. I want to, first of all, just affirm one thing for me. Human dignity means human dignity. My sense of what dignity and to whom dignity applies is absolutely universal for human subjects. I know that universalism for some people is a kind of problematic term, but for me, I do believe that there are ways in which we must allow genuine and equal respect for everyone without exception. So I want to sort of underscore that preface again. I also understand that there are ways in which these terms, dignity, these terms around certain groups, take different meaning in different people's mouths. Those mouths are often in the context of political discourse, in the context of a certain kind of activism. I want to stress that inside of the vein of Documenta, we are talking about the ability to allow for discourse. And discourse means, of course, the ability to argue about these terms, but to not weaponize them. That we do not use the terms against each other, but we seek a real understanding around not only what this may mean for one group, but what it means for another. And if anything, be prepared to adjust our expectations to those new meanings and new understandings. In terms of the idea that this might be a kind of rise of an apolitical elite, I maybe think you might be sort of referring to artists. Are you thinking about artists or art professionals, cultural workers, or?
The consumers.
Ah, this is interesting. Okay, sorry, I was not interpreting that way. This idea that maybe the people who sort of come to Documenta as audiences then receive what feel like anodyne messages around culture in the moment now. Look, I cannot predict yet what is going to happen in terms of the artist list or artworks. I also understand that artists have strong feelings. I am not afraid of those strong feelings and presentations. My job and the job of my artistic team is, again, to frame and contextualize this for an audience who then needs to decide whether or not they receive them. So I don't think one has to fear that this will be a wholly kind of aestheticized Documenta. Now, this is one, and in the spirit of its predecessors, always has been an exhibition that is contending with exactly the difficulties of the world now. There is no way to escape some of those difficult topics. Again, the approach is going to be the most important consideration.
Gibt es weitere Fragen?
Sehr gerne.
Good evening, Ms. Beckwith. I'm Thibaut Peja from Kassel.
I have that problem too.
And I'm quite curious when you will move to Kassel, come to our town, and when we will be able to meet you, maybe you and your beloved ones, when and where will you come and where can we meet you?
Okay. thank you for that, Herr Pleasure. I will be moving to Kassel this summer, so I very much look forward to taking up residence here. I am looking for a flat, if anyone has a good lead. But most importantly, I'm really interested in getting to know the people. I'm a big fan of parties and dancing, so if anyone also would love to throw a nice sort of hoopla and teach me how to do some local dances, I'm game, and so call me at any time. I am very, very serious when I said that I cannot go now into public without someone shaking my hand and really thanking me for being here, for welcoming me to Kassel. I mean, going back to, again, those very critical first questions, I had actually worried that maybe the environment around Documenta had become hostile. Absolutely. And that there would be a real fear, even here in Kassel, around the reception of future Documenta editions. But I have seen literally nothing but warmth and full-throttled support from everyone here. It is very, very clear that this city cares for Documenta, not just for each individual. And I want to honor that sense of care, that you care about it as an institution, not just from edition to edition, but you know that it is your collective responsibility as a city to see it thrive and to welcome the world here. And so, again, I thank you for that and want to honor that.
Gibt es weitere Fragen? Ja, bitte dort.
Danke, Andreas. Yeah, welcome to Kassel, Mrs. Beckwith. I'm David Zabel. I'm head of the Cultural Advisory Board of the city in Kassel and also representing the Initiative for Black People in Germany here. They're really, really excited to meet you, to get to know you, to have an exchange about what it means to be Afro-German. In comparisons to the Afro-American point of view. One question, you talked about utopias, you talked about the present. I'm studying Afrofuturism for many, many years now. Is the Afrofuturistic cultural movement playing a role in the upcoming Documenta? Works like contemporary artists like N.K. Jemisin, authors like Nnedi Okorafor, or my dearest role model, Octavia Butler, will their worlds be regained or reborn in this edition of Documenta? Is there any chance to hope for that? Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hello, Herr Zabel. First of all, I very much look forward to meeting this population of Black Germans, especially Afro-Germans, having a conversation, because though I started my conversation and my talk around the sense of shared connections to a kind of Black diasporic community, one of the things that I've learned, of course, as I've gotten older and really moved past some of that early utopian thinking, is to also honor each other's difference. And that a sense of difference can be actually a site of coming together, right? That we don't need a vision of the world where we are all the same, but one where we can actually foreground our differences, and those differences become the place of curiosity and conversation for each other. So I take that attitude with me, both in meeting particular communities, but again, connecting with the broader community here in Kassel. As for the question of what will be committed, if Afrofuturism will be a part of Document 16, first of all, I will say I won't take the bait about what's going to be in it specifically, but thank you for asking. But I will say, first of all, it's probably important to define Afrofuturism. It's a long-standing cultural movement, one that had sort of thoughts in early science fiction writings in the early 20th century, but really came to the fore in American culture in the 60s and 70s with the rise of characters like Sun Ra. He was a musician, spent a lot of time in Chicago, and Sun Ra, whose name clearly wasn't Sun Ra when he was born, basically created an entire mythos around himself as being from Saturn. He came from Saturn. He came from Saturn to the Earth to bring a new kind of musical form, artistic form, theatricality to the world, and the message of Black beings and Black people as a kind of demigod, if not God. And Sun Ra was joined in with others who also began to expand these narratives around Afrofuturism. There's a whole myth that there is a society at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean called Drexia. And Drexia is inhabited by the people and their descendants who jumped from slave ships and survived at the bottom of the ocean. So this kind of mythological thinking, this mythological thinking of sort of recreating a vision of Black people who, as I explained before in the talk, had often been disenfranchised, they had now been recreated as magical, as gods, as people holding a very special knowledge. So that is overall a kind of overview of Afrofuturism. What I take from that movement the most is not only its imaginative thinking, which is very important to me, it is true, but also the sense that one can play with perceptions of time. One can play with perceptions of physics, the laws of gravity, and that you need that kind of imagination, in fact, to create these new futures that I hope we can. So thanks for introducing that concept.
Gibt es weitere Fragen?
Hi, my name is Gila Kolb. I'm a researching art educator, so my question is about art education.
Of course.
And I learned that you had been already researching on Documenta history, and I think one of... from an art educational view, the art education of Documenta has been quite important for that field, at least for the last 20, 25 years. So my question is, what are your plans concerning education?
Mm-hmm. An excellent question. Thank you for that. Again, no specifics today. However, one of the things that I have always believed is that An exhibition does not exist without its audience. And the most important thing that can happen with an audience is that they walk away with an understanding of how they can navigate a Documenta. That doesn't mean they may absolutely understand everything. That doesn't mean they may agree with everything that they do understand. But it does mean that they have an opening and a framework for how they can move through the contemporary art propositions that are put forward in an exhibition. It's also important for me personally to think about artists as partners in this kind of educational imprint. In the terms of interpretation, I understand that a big part of Documenta, which I also share, is the idea of mediation, sort of working through educational principles with artists and with art objects directly. So I don't think of interpretation and education as sort of separate or a side or an afterthought to an exhibition. I think of it first, and I think Professor Dr. Hoffman can also attest to the ways in which I have been very insistent on thinking about the exhibition and its interpretation together. You're welcome.
Wir haben noch eine Frage hier links.
Hello, my name is Ulrich Etscheid. I'm musicologist and also very interested in art and collecting art. I was happily surprised to hear how often you spoke about music. Mm-hmm. Just recently you spoke about San Ra, but also before you mentioned the art ensemble of Chicago. As far as I can see, music has always played a certain role in the Documenta exhibitions, in some more, in others less. Can we hope, if I may say, that music will be get a real focus in your Documenta? And if so, what are your ideas, and what would you? Which role will music play in an art exhibition? Mm.
So, all of you are asking about certain details. It is true. It is very, very, very true that music plays an important role in my thinking, and not music in particular, but as I talked about, I think about the arts together in an interdisciplinary form because that was the way I was educated. I was educated by people who really didn't separate out these forms. And you see this also in the Freedom Principle. I am trying to create frameworks in my curatorial work by which we can understand the integration, not the kind of separation of these disciplines. So yes, we can hope, maybe, for a certain kind of music. But as I said before, the idea is that the sort of performing and visual arts sit in equal stance for me.
Vielen Dank. Wir schließen den Publikumsdialog schon mit einer letzten Frage hier auf der rechten Seite.
My name is Katerina and I'm just a very excited Documenta visitor. I loved Documenta last year and I was wondering if you plan an equal way of bringing the artists towards the visitors and the city. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it a lot that there was sauna outside and people could get in touch with the artists and have a nice time together. So this is my first question. How do you manage to bring the art to the streets? But then from the last Documenta with the conversations with the artists, I also heard that there were problems for artists from the Global South, for example, of not getting a 100-day visa, just a 90-day visa, that sometimes it was hard to get housing. Artists had to share like 4 people, 1 room. And do you also think in that direction of how to make the stay at Documenta for international artists a nice time?
Thank you for that. You know, I had a very similar experience to you when I came for the last Documenta, that I was able to go see the objects, the projects around the city, but really one of the biggest joys was sitting with artists they sort of set up a kind of commune around the Fridericianum on the area outside, and this became this common kitchen, but this also became an area for discourse, for conversations, even really for arguments. But it was amazing, that kind of spirit of camaraderie that was part of the exhibition. I'm happy to hear that you said that you had this really amazing close contact with artists, because my sense was not everyone had that sort of possibility. And I think for me, what's really important is to make sure that the audience has this sort of equal access to everything. Again, with no details, right? No details about it, who's coming and for how long. The idea is I don't want to hide that artist's presence in that way. I want the public to be able to be a part of these conversations directly with the artist, and that it's not a privileged position. I can't speak to visa issues. I can't speak directly now, obviously, to what are the matters of like the German government and state. But these are actually very good to hear in terms of understanding that different geographies require different solutions, and that we need to be very sensitive to those differences up front, even as we plan to invite people into Kassel, because I need everyone who is becoming part of this document to feel this exact same joy and warmth that I feel here now. Thank you.
Sehr geehrte Damen und Herren, vielen Dank für Ihre Fragen. Wir freuen uns darauf, den Austausch mit Ihnen zur Documenta 16 weiter fortzuführen. Ich beende nun diese Vorstellung und ich bedanke mich sehr herzlich. Zunächst natürlich bei Naomi Beckfis. Sehr herzlichen Dank für diesen beeindruckenden Vortrag. Ja, der große Applaus zeigt, wie sehr wir uns auf deine Documenta 16 freuen. Und die Freude ist ganz auf meiner Seite. Ich bedanke mich aber auch bei Ihnen, lieber Herr Dr. Schöller. Und ich bedanke mich auch bei Timon Gremmels für die Grußworte. Vor allem aber bedanke ich mich bei Ihnen allen für Ihr großes Interesse an dieser Veranstaltung und für Ihr Kommen. Sofern Sie journalistisch tätig sind, können Sie den Pressetext zur heutigen Veranstaltung gleich mit einem QR-Code am Eingang downloaden. Ich lade nun aber Sie alle herzlich ein, zum Get-Together und bei einem Glas Wein noch etwas und ein wenig bei uns zu bleiben, und freue mich auf den Austausch mit Ihnen allen. Herzlichen Dank für Ihr Interesse.